Hello, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about third-party packages, which are often referred to as a secret sauce of Django. So to start things off, why do we have third-party packages, Carlton? Why would you say? You know, Django is a batteries-included framework. It comes with a lot out of the box. Why not have everything in the box?
Because it's been possible to maintain, essentially. And for 80% of projects, they wouldn't need 80% of the functionality. So batteries included it's the 80% case. It's almost every project should need everything that comes with the core framework. And then in order to keep it maintainable, but also to keep it relevant, extra functionality lives outside the core.
So we wanted to go through our favorite third-party packages, and we'll list to them because there are, let's say, thousands. There's a website, Django Packages, that lists all of them that we'll link to in the show notes. There are tons and tons and tons, partly because Django, with its projects and app structure, lends itself quite well to separating out functionality for these things. So if you build it for yourself, you can make it available to other developers and then, you know, can be community projects.
But it's always been encouraged, right? So now we've got 10-year history of people being encouraged to build third-party apps and then building third-party apps and making them available. And so there are there's so many. Almost everything you think of, there's a good app out there that does it, or there's one that's at least good enough for you to think use as a kind of inspiration to copy it in your own project.
I think it's a great way to learn if it doesn't do exactly what you want, to look and see how someone implemented functionality. Because again, with the web, almost nothing is unique. It's someone's had the problem and tackled it before. And
just one caveat is that before you install a third-party app, just have a look and make sure it's well-maintained. Because what can happen is you install a third-party app and it works great and that's fine, but it doesn't get updated. And over time, then when you want to upgrade Django, you can't upgrade Django because you're tied to this third-party app. So just vet them before you install them.
Yeah, don't go crazy. I mean, in the way to, you know, how do you know something's active? I would say it should have a fair number of stars, so probably a couple hundred. And you should see some action within the last 3 to 6 months, if not daily.
Well, okay, but
no?
Django app, well, yes, but like be sensible. But Django app conf, which is a package I maintained, it's used by Django Compressor and a few other applications. But this week I released a new version, which just changed the packaging metadata to say it supports Python 3.7 and the latest Django's and things like this, but it hadn't been updated for 2 years, but it had zero issues and zero pull requests.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough, yeah.
So, you know, it's not that if it hasn't been updated, like things which are very stable, they don't need updating every week.
Yeah, fair enough. I know, I brought it up because it's sometimes hard to tell. But anyways, all the packages we're going to talk about today are vetted, and so if they're what you need, you should feel as comfortable as one can using them. And we should note, we're not going to be... So there's also, what's a third-party app? There are additional things like Wagtail, Django CMS, which I guess they're technically apps, but they're really more like
frameworks on frameworks.
Yeah, frameworks on frameworks.
So we're not Wagtail and CMS, they're full CMS frameworks, and they're amazing and they're great, but they've got their own ecosystems, they've got their own dependencies. Oh, wow.
So we're not going to talk about those today, maybe in a future episode. So let's start right at the top. I mean, I think everyone would agree the number one third-party package, and most people probably don't know that it's a third-party package, is Django REST Framework, which is how one builds RESTful APIs with Django. It is what the majority of professional Django developers, I would say, use when they use Django. And yet it is not part of Django Core, which, you know, you're a co-maintainer on it, so perhaps you can speak to why it's not part of Django itself.
Just historical, I guess. To create JSON responses was, you know, there's a JSON response class, and then there was a package called TastyPy, which enabled you to do RESTful APIs, which was a third-party package, and then along came REST Framework, and it was never... It just was built as a third-party package, and it survived as a third-party package, and it continues to this day. But it's, yeah, I mean, for me, Django REST Framework, right, now what else do I need?
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's, that's probably the number one third-party app that everyone will use. And we'll do an entire episode or episodes on it. It has its own third-party packages that we're not going to talk about today.
Yeah,
but okay. That's another big one. So actually, in the news is Django Channels, because you've taken on a new role with this, right, Carlton?
Yeah. So Andrew Godwin, who created Channels, has stepped back from that. So hopefully that gives him a bit of capacity to work on bringing async support into Django Core itself. But he stepped back from the maintenance role in Django Channels, and I've stepped up to do that with a couple of other people. So we're just keeping that ticking over. But that gives async support to...
Right, and this is really the future.
Yeah, the main use case, I guess, right now is for WebSockets, right? If you want a WebSocket thing, then Django Channels is the way to go. But also if you want to build async applications using Django, you can do that right now with Channels. And then we'll see what happens with the work that Andrew comes in, perhaps over the next 6 to 12 months. We'll start seeing how Django itself will provide support for async code. But Django Channel, if you want WebSockets, Django Channels, bam.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on. So I would say the one that I use on every project is Django Debug Toolbar, which is a way to view your requests. So to see how efficient, you know, your blog list is. This is a small one. I can't think of why you wouldn't want it on every project.
Yeah, it's just super. It lets you view template context variables, this template extends that template that includes this template. Which templates actually did get rendered and what were the contexts that they actually saw? This is just super. Lets you view your SQL requests. You can create plugins for it. If you want to view extra bits and bobs, you can. Panels.
So both to, you know, hop into your own project or a new project and see what is the template structure, and especially for performance, you can really see, how many queries are involved. So that's really a must have. I can't think of a project I've worked on that didn't have that. Another one is that I especially like is Django Extensions, which is a way. It's several tools, but the really nice one is you can add plus, right? So you can do Python Run Server plus. So if you want to go into the Django shell, it will automatically preload all the things that you'll need. It has a whole bunch of, it's really a Swiss Army knife of sort of additional tools that as you become more experienced with Django are just really nice to have.
Yeah, my favorite one there is it will graph your models for you and output those in the dot format, the GraphViz format, which then I drag into OmniGraffle, which is a capable editor for editing those, but you can drag that into anywhere. And then it gives you a nice kind of class diagram of your models. Yeah. Which is lovely to have, and you can edit that, and it's one I use a lot. So Django Extensions, super.
Yeah, yeah. I don't use all those parts of it that you just mentioned. I should look into that. Which ones do you have? We've got a list of things.
So another one I maintain is Django Filter, which is awesome if you want to create if you want to allow people to filter by URL parameters. So, you know, if I put in, you know, size equals, I don't know, bit large, and I want to filter my query set, well, you don't just want to expose that raw user input and then feed it into the ORM because that's dangerous. So Django Filter will create a form which will then validate that the value was sensible. It will then take a quilter set and it will filter it. And you can create these, you can very easily and very declaratively create filter sets for your models, which enable you to filter by the parameters that you want, and you can filter across relationships and things like this. And Django Filter integrates with Django itself, but also with Django REST Framework too. So it enables you to create very easily filterable endpoints on your APIs, which is kind of cool. So, you know, I've got a list of blog posts. I want to filter by those that are tagged Django. Easy peasy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a separate, you know, security thing around just with, for you sort of alluded to it with URLs, you know, why you often probably don't want to include the primary key, for blog posts, because it'll give away the number of blogs that you have, right? Like you would use a UUID or you could slugify it.
There's a nice little thing called hash IDs, which is worth looking up.
I don't know that.
Well, what they do is they take the number and they pass it through a little algorithm, and it comes up with a 7 or 8 digit random string, and it can, and it's reversible, and that's great. But it's they're slightly longer than 1, 2, 3, 10, 100.
But it's not necessarily giving away that, you know, you have 100, you know, blog posts on your site.
Yeah, and the order is not deducible.
Right.
So you can't predict what the next one will be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the problem with slugs, if people haven't experienced this, is, you know, what do you do if, you know, your URL structure is, you know, mywebsite.com/blog/the name, and I write one called Hello World, and then Carlton writes one called Hello World. They can't exist at the same URL endpoint. So you have to deal with the conflicts, collisions of that sort. So that's why.
Just on slugs while we're here, we might as well say it. I quite like using unique for month or unique for year. So you put in the URL, you might have 2019-02 for February, and then you might have a slug which is unique for that month. And then it's not unique forever, but only one that month. And I kind of quite like using that sometimes. And that's an option on model fields. You can, if you've got a date time field on the model, you can give unique for month and say it has to be unique on reference to this date time field.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that. I mean, there's also an argument around not putting the, not timestamping things in the URL.
Yeah, lots of people don't like that now. If it is a traditional blog, like a web log, there's a difference between kind of what you want to have put out evergreen content where you don't want the date in the URL and a web log where it literally is saying, hey, today I did this. There's no harm then that being grouped by month or by year. So what else do I like? I like Django Watson, which is a super package which enables you to make use of your database's text searching features. It's perhaps viewed as slightly out of date now because Django has got more full text search features built in, but Django Watson is very good and worth looking at, and it supports all the different backends.
Great. So I haven't used it.
Well, it's great. It enables you to set up an index on a model, and then you can pass in a query set, and you can just get back a query set which only matches the search, and then you could filter them further. So you might say filter by a tag, then search for a string, and then filter again by publish this whatever you wanted to. But it's super. Django Watson, that's called. The other one by the same author is called Django Reversion, and this enables you to keep model histories of your models. So say you've got blog posts and you wanted to be able to go back in history and say, I've edited it, and then it's been edited again, but actually the version two hours ago I need to go and look at again. Django Reversion lets you do that.
That'd be very useful.
He's two good apps there that I like.
Yeah. Well, another one next on our list that I really like is called Django OAuth, which is what you would use for authentication. Again, because the challenge is that Django does not come with a built-in user registration sign-up form. So there's a couple of packages out there. I like Django OAuth the best. It does, I guess, two things. One is it enables social authentication. So if you want to add Google, Facebook, Twitter, it's very straightforward to do that. The other is that it provides a whole ton of customizable features. You can swap in email instead of username. There's a whole bunch of additional settings. So, you know, it is a third-party package. So, you know, like, for example, with email, this is a common one. The Django default is to have username, email, password, which is a little bit outdated right now. More common on websites is to have login or sign up be with email and password. So you can do that yourself. You need to dive in and use the model managers, which is a little bit of an advanced feature for people. Or you can, if you know that you need social or you want some of these additional features, you can just use Django OAuth, and it's a bit faster to get up and going. So in my first book, Django for Beginners, I show how to do, we use Django OAuth in some of the later chapters. And I think in my new book, I'm going to show, for the example with email, I'm going to show how to do it with model managers, but we're going to end up using Django OAuth because if you do want to have social authentication, which a lot of people do, it's a great way to do it and not have to roll your own solution.
Yeah, and it will capture the the OAuth tokens you need to hit the API. So, you know, if you've got Twitter login and you want to add Twitter features to your website, you've got the right credential to then make user request of the Twitter API on the user's behalf, which...
Yeah, you can see in the admin. I mean, all that auth stuff is a bit of a minefield. You really don't want to really run
one,
the solution.
One thing I was going to say about OAuth was that it needs a better tutorial because it is quite opaque, but then you've just said it's in your book.
I have one.
Brilliant. There you are.
There is one, you know, there was one from, I think, 4 or 5 years ago called the Missing OAuth Tutorial. Do a Google search for Django OAuth Tutorial. See what comes up.
Right. Okay. Because
I, you know, this is how I learn. I get frustrated and I write it up.
I remember when I started using OAuth, it was like, wow, this is powerful. It does exactly what I want, but I have no way of understanding this apart from reading the code and working it out. And it is a package that I use. And I was thinking, well, we need tutorials, but of course you've written one already. Well done.
That is the thing about all these third party packages is you get a tremendous amount of power, but then you need to learn how to use the packages. And as I sort of mentioned with Django OAuth, you know, I've gone full circle on it where I didn't initially know how to, you know, years ago, how to do email instead of username. I found Django OAuth. I sort of, you know, kludged together how to do it. And then I wanted and sort of learned how to do it the raw way. And now most cases I use Django OAuth, cause I understand what it's doing and it's managing the complexity, but it's a bit of a circle in the same way. I would say generic class-based views are versus function-based views.
No, and the other thing I like about OAuth, we've turned this into an OAuth podcast now, but the thing I like about OAuth as well is it enables users to manage multiple email addresses, which is nice if you want to, if they want to control notifications. If you need to send a user notifications, they want to say, look, I want notifications to this email address, not that one. And it enables them to add multiple email addresses and choose which one's their primary and things like that. So it's something that I like about it. Anyway, we should move on.
Yeah, and I include it in Django X, which is my Django starter project, because I think it's something I use in almost every project. All right, moving on. So we have ones for deployment, which are, or static files, which is...
static files, yeah.
Yeah, so white noise. Do you want to talk about that?
So there's two strategies here. Static files can be a pain. So the white noise...
let's explain. So static files, you can, when you're just prototyping, you can store them within Django, but you really don't want to do that. You want them on a CDN for performance reasons. Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
The thing is, can have that within Django. So, you know, when I teach this, I just sort of show how to set up static files and stuff, and then... and we use it, and then later I show how to, deploy using Django storages or something on S3 or something. I go progressively with it.
Right, but the thing is that the static files app will serve your views in development is perfectly well, and so they've got this little if debug that we all use, and that's perfect. But you can't use that in development. So then white noise comes along and it gives you a view which will serve your static files, and it adds the right caching headers, and it does all these nice things for you. That's one strategy. So it's called white noise. And then the other option is Django storages, which if you want to put your static files on S3 or Azure storages or Google Blob Store, it gives you the tools to do those.
Because I think you can use white noise in particular integrates well with Heroku.
Right, okay.
In general, though, you do want to put your static files on a CDN.
Yeah. So even if you use Django storages and put your static files in S3, for example, you then put CloudFront in front of it to speed that up or whatever.
We can get all of that later. Another big one.
But anyway, those two good ones.
Yeah. No, those are great. Those are ones you use all the time. Environment variables. This is something you should use in your projects. And Django Environ is sort of the default. There's also .env, but Django Environ is sort of managing your environment variables. Do you want to? I'm blanking here on how to explain the package properly, other than it helps you manage variables.
It helps you control your environment. I mean, this is a fuss, right? We want to do the right thing and not put sensitive variables into our settings files, so we keep them in the environment. But then we've got to remember that we need to export them into the calling process before we can launch Django. It's all a pain. Django Environ help you manage all
right, because you'll use different variables, you know, locally versus deploying.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't want to put that in source control. For example, like your secret key or your you know, your Stripe ID if you're using payments or something.
Yeah, or your database, you know, your
AWS. Your database. Yeah. Yeah.
What's it called? IAM access key thing. Like,
yeah.
You need to keep that secret. So environment variables for that. Okay, fine. We'll skip on that one. Django Guardian is another nice one. So if you wanted to do... So Django has a nice permissions system, which by default, the Django control.auth permissions will say, yes, you can access blog posts. Yes, you can access, I don't know, the sales catalog. But if you want to restrict object access to individual objects, then Django Guardian will help you do that. So you can create object permissions for this specific blog post or this specific item in the sales catalog. And that's a useful addition. Django doesn't provide that.
Yeah, permissions and authorizations is, you know, very much in sort of intermediate level thing, but every single project you want to lock those down and set up the hierarchy. And again, every project you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once you get beyond a certain size of team, it will always be the case that there's a category which people can only access a subset of. And as soon as you need that, you need object permissions. And Django Guardian is the go-to solution for that.
Yep. So another one, I'll tee this up. Django Compressor is one I really like that you maintain, which is for compressing your static files. Right?
Yeah.
You should use Django Compressor or something like that on all your projects.
Yeah, I mean, so what's really good about it as well is if you use pre-processors like SAS or LESS or post-CSS or, you know, I use it for Elm, but other people can use it for React. And what you do is you just create a template block, which has got you with the compress tag, and then you put your script tags in them as normal. So you might put your link tags for your CSS or your script tags for your JavaScript, but you give them a special media type, which will be like for SAS, so content style sheet / SAS. And then when it sees that, it will run it through the pre-processor and convert your SAS into CSS so that you can load it straight into the browser. And in development, it keeps them separate so that you can trace it back to the individual style sheets. But then for production, you run a compress command and it compiles them all into one file, and you can minimize them and you can gzip them and you can run it whatever pipeline you want to, and then it puts them into the static files folders for white noise or Django storages to deploy, and job done. And it's brilliant.
No, it all ties in very nicely, and you know, there's a number of local versus production things with Django that you know, we've talked about a couple that these packages help you with, because you want to get up and running quickly and locally, but then for production, it's a different set of requirements often.
Yeah, and so anyway, I really love that, and I'm not a front end developer, and so if I work in a team where there's a professional front end developer, they will replace Django Compressor with their own build system and their own whatever, right. And we'll work out the deployment. But for me as a Django developer, I can do something that's semi respectable, quite more than semi respectable, just using Django Compressor, and then when people need to go that bridge further, they can do that.
Yeah. No, it's a really nice optimization. You know, maybe, so one more, this is sort of a fun one, Django Admin Honeypot. So a best practice is that one will notice that every Django site has the admin at /admin. So if you were a malicious actor, you could write a script and find out if a site was a Django site, and then you could try to hack it. There's a couple ways you can safeguard that. Number one is change the URL. So don't have admin at admin. Django Admin Honeypot lets you see people trying to break into your admin. So it's it's sort of a fun one. It's a good reminder that you should harden your admin. There's actually a number of steps to do on that. But that's sort of a fun one if you want to see someone in particular trying to break in your site versus just random bots on the internet.
Yeah, right. Brilliant.
All right.
Okay,
so
that's a whole long list, right? But check the show notes for more on those. This is just a quick run through of our favorites. There are, as we said, millions or thousands of others. There's a group on GitHub called JazzBand, which maintain a whole group. And so the danger with a third-party app is it's difficult to maintain over time. And so JazzBand take on packages which need help maintenance, and then they maintain them as a group. And so they keep these packages going and they're lively. So anything in JazzBand you can rely on as being well-maintained. Check out Django packages, as Will said.
If you think there's any packages that we haven't covered or should go in depth on, please let us know. You can do that at djangochat.com. There's a way to contact us. We're also on Chat Django, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Okay, bye-bye.